These are the droids you're looking for.
Over here!
Death Star alert.
You're looking for.
This is madness.
It blew my mind when I read about it.
No, it's 100% going to be the best film in the franchise.
This is madness.
Star Wars is only now starting.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
Did you hear that? Did you hear that? You talking about
these are the droids
I
you're
felt
looking
nauseous
for.
With just pure excitement.
These are the droids you're looking for.
Why isn't it December 15th already?
And then I saw the Porg for the first time speaking. And I'll tell you what, it really whets the appetite.
These are the droids you're looking
for. This is madness. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Chris and Sam, I am Mike. Sadly, without Ryan, we'll have to hold off on getting some of his takes. You know that Ryan always brings them hot and fresh, Chris, right? I mean, is that a Ryan thing?
He's, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a Ryan thing, but he's also hot and freshy. I get it.
We have news to discuss, as there's been no more casting news in the galaxy far, far away. We're going to get to that shortly, but we have an email to get into, guys, this week. Email us at droidspod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at droidspod. But excited to hear from some of the listeners that are out there enjoying the podcast. This one comes from John. He says, "Hi, droids, big fan of the pod. I feel that I should set the record straight with the improvised Falcon that I alone constructed as a child. Chris's memories." Chris, is this your brother?
Wait a second. This is sounding like might be my brother.
Chris's memories are faulty at best, as he was shipped to military school at a young age.
Wait a second.
I have few memories of seeing him at the family compound as a child, especially during the construction of the Lego reproduction.
Wait a second.
As far as a picture, it certainly does exist. However, it is part of my personal collection and would not be distributed for free. Any further inquiries could be handled through my business manager and legal team. As far as the scale, that is proprietary information. Again, big fan and great job with the pod, guys. Continued success. And signed, John. P.S. If you would be so kind to send Chris my early best wishes for his birthday and also holiday greetings, it would save me a lot of time.
Wait a second.
Chris, happy birthday. Merry Christmas.
Thank you so much.
Enjoy the new year.
Thank you so much. Wait a second. You got to believe me. You have to believe me. I was there. We're going to get to the bottom of this Falcon story.
I don't know. Chris, this seems pretty well stated, Chris. I'm believing John.
Oh, no.
Chris, how long are John's Christmas cards usually to you? Or how little time do you normally spend together?
Usually a stack of them that he'll do them in bundles.
Oh, then I'm happy. Nobody, you know, who's writing letters these days? You know, we'll save John some time. He can go play with more Lego.
Wow.
I write a letter to Ryan Johnson thanking him for The Last Jedi every day.
You do?
Yeah.
That's a lot of letters. Do you did it before? Like you did it, like this production started and then.
Yeah, once the moment I heard he was part of the crew, I was like, all right, if he's running this. And I continue now that he's making a new trilogy.
Regardless if I was there or not, I'm going to get this picture. It's going to be posted on our website. You're going to see. It was 1/6 the scale.
Now it's down to 1/6. It was 1/10. The measurement continues to change.
So 1/6 scale.
I thank John for really setting the record straight here.
Yeah.
Because we can trust him, even though Chris doesn't want to hear from his brother. John, thank you for the email. Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to send us an email, droidspod@gmail.com. Also, on iTunes, if you wouldn't mind leaving a review, let your friends know that you like the podcast. We would love to hear from you. And, of course, join us on social media at droidspod. Guys, there's big news as there's been a couple of additions to the Episode 9 cast with the addition of Matt Smith of Doctor Who and the Crown fame. Ooh. And Dominic Monaghan of Lost and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I actually feel maybe better about one than the other, but I want to get your takes on this.
Ooh,
new information.
I
want to
know.
Additions.
I have a theorem, a concept, if you will, to go with this kind of when this news happens. I call them binding geeks. So let me give you an example. Count Dooku, Chris, help me out. Who plays Count Dooku?
Wait, what?
Help me out.
Oh, wait,
here.
I can't. Oh, Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee. Christopher Lee is a binding geek because he's in Lord of the Rings and he's in Star Wars.
Oh, Patrick Chris, Stewart. I thought you were asking yourself. You were like, hey, no. Chris, I thought you were talking to yourself.
No, that's for my other podcast, Chris with Chris. But so there's binding geeks, right? So Ian McKellen, X-Men, Lord of the Rings, Patrick Stewart, X-Men, Star Trek. So now we've got Matt Smith, which is connecting the Doctor Who universe to Star Wars.
You know what I got to thinking when I heard this news today?
Yeah.
I was like, yo, Matt Smith should follow up and be the next James Bond when Ooh. Daniel Craig's done.
Interesting.
It's like, I think they got to go completely against type with that. But, and the news was like Star Wars. It's interesting. Chris, I remember when we lived together,
yeah.
you watched the entire, what was he, the 11th Doctor, 12th, 10th, something like that. You watched that entire arc with Matt Smith as the Doctor and, mm-hmm. you know, the Amy Pond saga.
Yeah. Another binding geek.
That's true.
Marvel.
Nebula. Yeah. I caught a few of those, quite a few of those episodes and really enjoyed him and his performance. Yeah. But I'm actually, I think, more familiar with him at this point from The Crown. I don't know if you guys have watched that.
Yep. Yeah, that show's solid.
But it's really, really enjoyable. And it's just like great, like prestige historical drama TV mm-hmm. with all the kind of, you know, hey, look, you want to talk jackets? Let's talk about some serious jacket business in The Crown. You know, and so I'm quite excited. You know, I think the sort of obvious immediate thought that may have entered both of your heads is like, he seems very imperial officer-ish,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
with the sort of stiff upper
regal.
Lip,
yeah.
you know, yep. Slicked back hair. He's got that he's got that Tarkin-esque bone structure. <You know? laughs> he's got the cheekbones of a Grand Moff, if I've ever seen him.
Yeah. He's that's definitely a Tarkin.
He's Tarkin.
But you know, it's funny you say that because I mean, you're seeing him coming hot off The Crown, and I think that if you were to be watching Who, where he's more of like a swashbuckler kind of guy, I think not a is that the word? I don't know. He's kind of like he's very goofy and loopy, and I feel like he'd fit in with the rebels. But I could see it now after watching him in The Crown as
you know what.
An imperial or a resistance.
That is funny, Chris. You talking about how he in Doctor Who he almost has, and I don't want to like associate it with something. I guess people now have like mixed feelings, but there's a little bit of like a Jack Sparrow to him.
Yeah,
and I'm not saying that he's basing it off that or that he's cribbing from Johnny Depp or that's you know, but there's like an element of that when you said swashbuckling.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, he is kind of like loose and just swinging by the seat of his pants.
Always like a little disheveled, kind of like.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I would love, I hope they do give him something fun and maybe go against type with him. I'd love to see him as a rebel personally.
Oh, or what about just some kind of creature? I could see him as like a goofy creature also.
Mocap or actual?
Maybe like a little bit of both.
Hmm.
What do you, a little bit of both? Like like the Simon Pegg style?
Yeah.
Wear
exactly.
a costume and then animate the face?
Yep.
Nah, I don't like that. That's a bad idea.
I don't know. Sam, I'm right there with you. I thought immediately Imperial Officer, First Order Officer, bring in another big bad. I mean, we have all these other additions. We don't know where Carrie Russell is going to end up. Mm-hmm. So, and then new characters. Richard E. Grant does seem to me like he would be the lead First Order Officer that would be in addition to Hux.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have another one.
Like Hux is still on the table. I mean, unless they pull the rug from us and they do jump time a little bit or I mean I guess they could change up the roster any point, but like they could also jump time and you know we could find out like, oh, this is what happened to Hux and it's now whomever.
As we learned from the director and the Jedi, I think that Rian Johnson probably would get a lot even more hate mail if he removed Hux from JJ removed Hux from the equation, because there was a comment in that documentary about how Russians were constantly emailing him or tweeting at him, please don't kill Hux, because they loved him so much.
They love Hux so much.
And yet he then turned him into kind of a bumbling fool or you know, a person who gets beat up the entire time.
Right. Yeah, he became like kind of just like the fall guy for everything.
So I will say I felt better about one than the other, because I do feel very good about Matt Smith. Dominic Monaghan, on the other hand, I'm not so sure because I loved him in Lost. Charlie, I mean, that storyline episode, the final episode of season three, not Penny's boat.
Yeah.
The memes that were out there already saying not Ray's parents. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I really like Dominic Monaghan and I enjoyed him in Lord of the Rings, though not as big a fan as I was of him in Lost. He just, to me, initial gut reaction doesn't feel like a Star Wars character, but that's the what I usually do. I have to warm up to it. And I think there's something about JJ maybe casting a little bit too recognizable actors for what is guaranteed to be a more minor role because this is the final film in the franchise or in the saga.
It does seem like they're jam-packing it full of people that a little more stardom than is usually seen in a Star Wars movie.
When let's be honest, we're all here for the Rey and Kylo showdown that is inevitable.
It's also funny that it is a little bit like JJ's just inviting some of his old friends.
Yeah.
or for the Rey and Kylo shipping.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that actually, I mean, that I do think is maybe the greatest perk or the greatest pay it forward you could have as a director. You know, with the level of success that someone like JJ has had is like, you know, hey, you know, bring your friends, get them. This is going to have some, major residuals for these guys. So it's like a huge payday for anybody who has a speaking line.
Like if you're in this movie for like three lines, you're like, well, there you go. I don't have to do anything for a year.
There's the new house and a boat. You know, I think,
you're right. That's very funny.
I don't know. I go back to the theory that, you know, I was a big follower of like Chris Nolan's Dark Knight franchise, and he spoke a lot. That was one of those films where it was like every role, even the minor ones, often had notable actors in them. You go back to Batman Begins, and you've got Rutger Hauer, you know, as like a C-plot nemesis, and you've got Rage Sherbagia. I don't know how to say that guy's name, but he's the he's turned up and you'd recognize him instantly. Yeah. He usually plays like a Russian or Eastern European, and he's the guy, the homeless guy with the coat. But it's like Nolan spoke about how in Richard Donner's Superman, you know, one of the best things that Donner did with that film was cast even the small roles. He got Marlon Brando for 3 minutes in the beginning of the movie.
That's all just Marlon would allow.
When you that's playing to both their strengths, short days and good crafty, but the idea of like of filling every role that, with a worthy actor or an overqualified actor, and it just lends so much to the movie. There is going to be no weak point due to a casting choice, due to an extra, you know, saying a line funny. And, you know, I got to think for all these people, no matter what the size of the role is, they're going to, most of these people are still of the generation that was like defined by Star Wars. So it's they're going to be excited to be there.
Ben Mendelsohn, another Binding Geek. It's when you just combine two realms of fandom together in one movie to generate a giant audience. Think of all the Whovians. I'm sure there's the Venn diagram between people that like Doctor Who and like Star Wars, I'm sure, is near a perfect circle, though.
Sam, I gravitate, what you're talking about, is that I actually kind of gravitate, though, towards wanting to see the unknowns because I like to envision them only in Star Wars. And when you come in with the previous roles, I feel like there's a little bit of baggage in my perception, which, again, takes that whole warming up from me because I'm like, oh, there's Matt Smith from The Crown. Oh, there's Dominic Monaghan from Lost. I loved seeing Ray, and well, I had seen John Boyega before, but I felt like this character to me only existed in this universe, and that almost carries over to the other films, even though now I've seen Ray in another role in Murder on the Orient Express. I kind of just appreciate when they cast unknowns who to me embody the character and become that character in that universe, and my imagination kind of runs with them always being there.
Well, let me think about like the you know, you have to do it perfectly, right? When you look at Superman the movie, you've got Christopher Reeve, an unknown, in the lead role. He's the tabula rasa. He's the blank slate for everyone to put their vision of Superman onto. And then what they're doing that's beneficial with those supporting actors who are, you know, perhaps, you know, overqualified is, if you do it right, you're using them as like a shorthand for what you should know about the character. You know, you've that's got Marlon Brando is the godfather, the firm and strong, but ultimately loving, you know, father figure, and also a previous generation's sort of like strong, muscular hero in his own right. When you go to the Batman films, it's like, what do we know about Michael Caine? Well, we love him, and he's sweet, and he's supportive, and he's fatherly at this, you know, juncture. So, well, he's Alfred, and as soon as you see him, you know exactly. It saves them having to do a lot of that legwork of like.
You're talking about Batman. I noticed you named Batman and Superman characters. Is this Batman versus Superman?
Yeah, I'm talking about, well, in the, like, you, when you have these perfect, these perfectly cast things, like you've got Eisenberg as Luthor, you've got, you've got Ben Affleck as the best Batman ever committed to screen.
I see. No, I see what you're saying, though. It is like the lead, like Christopher, like usually the lead in something, they don't get to have all the fun. They don't get to do the character work. They don't get to make the jokes. They have to play it pretty straight. And I think that when you have an actor that is a relative unknown, but somebody that is more than capable in the role, I think like the kind of the juxtaposition happens is that you have a lead actor or a group of lead actors that like aren't, they're not going for gold. Like they're doing the role to the best of their ability. And often that comes across, but like, they're not overreaching. They're not like trying to do their thing. And I think that helps like other characters, like you said, like give them gifts. And then that makes the lead role, the straight people, like kind of elevate, because it gives them more stuff to work with.
Sam, you're trying to tell us is that Star Wars is about to have an addict guitar player in its mix, as well as a stern, obnoxious husband type character.
Yeah, I think probably. Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
A swashbuckling time traveler. Which is perfect for the Star Wars universe.
Think about Benicio, you know, like Benicio del Toro. I think they were able to take a few shortcuts with his character just because you immediately knew that he was a little bit shifty, a little bit untrustworthy, and that's like from this great body of work he has.
Yeah.
And the familiarity we have with like things he can do. But you're right. I mean, it may not be a one to one. Like, I don't know that Matt Smith and Dominic Monaghan were going to be cast.
I'm kidding with you, Sam.
I also don't know. The only thing I think I've ever seen Dominic Monaghan in is the Lord of the Rings movies. I've never seen Lost, and I don't.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what else he's
Sam,
done.
Sam. Oh, we're going to sit down. I'm going to watch Game of Thrones episodes with you and Lost episodes back to back for the next 4 or 5 months.
Sounds like a literal nightmare.
He is a great character actor, though. I think that, and that, I don't know, I think that got a little lost.
What were his efforts after Lost? I don't remember seeing much of Dominic Monaghan after Lost.
I don't know that answer, but I just like, from the 9 hours of Lord of the Rings, like that's a lot of proving grounds. that's enough. That's like a couple
Lord of the
TV
Rings
seasons.
Was before Lost, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Not by much, though.
Yeah, it looks like literally it was right before. It was 2001 was Fellowship, and then Lost started in 2004.
Yeah. I think they started filming Lord of the Rings in like 97 or 98 or something.
So let's kind of do a check-in here. We've gotten into more casting. Filming has begun. There have been some leaked photos from the set of Episode 9. We're not going to get into those because we're not going to talk about spoilers here. Though, Sam, there's a little bit better view of that Finn vest that you are so excited about in those leaked photos.
I've seen it. I'm a big, I like Instagram, and I'm going to have to like not use it, I guess, for a year. Because now, like, whatever algorithm they're using from whenever they listen to me talk when they're using the microphone on my phone 24 hours a day to spy on me, they must hear me recording a Star Wars podcast once a week and talking about it for hours. So they're like, jamming up my feed with those leaked photos.
I mean, the good thing is you really didn't learn anything from it. It's the photos don't give away much at all.
No, I haven't learned anything in years.
Well, I think you've learned a little bit about jackets, and we're going to get to that a little bit later in this podcast, because I look forward to all the knowledge that you have gained about the Star Wars jackets.
Oh, for sure.
On the check-in, I want to feel like now that we've seen a little bit more about the casting, Kerry Russell, Matt Smith, Dominic Monaghan are all added to the existing characters, a couple of newbies to the Star Wars universe, all the people that we already know and love. They've begun filming. We've heard a little bit about it. How are you feeling about Episode 9 just in terms of, you know, what news we do know about it? Has it changed the way you're feeling about it, expectations? Because I will say that I've started to come to the conclusion that I will not enjoy Episode 9 as much as Episode 8, and that's not a good way to go into the film. But I just don't see what JJ can do in 9.
Oh, my goodness.
To close it out better than 8.
This is shocking. I am getting excited. When I find out more of these cast release, I'm getting more and more excited every day. And I think it's because they are jam-packing this movie full of stuff. And I think it's going to be very large and sprawling.
Is it going to be 2 parts, Chris?
I think it's going to be 2 parts. But I also think that's like, I think they're going to pack a lot into this. This is going to be supposedly the final time of that we're going to see this kind of Skywalker saga. So I'm hoping that they expand the scope at the end of this movie, kind of how they did in Return of the Jedi, to the galaxy. But now I think they need too much, like they had to heighten to Starkiller Base. I think we need to heighten the scope of the galaxy and kind of how important these actions are. And
Chris,
if it is,
do you mean like a legendary moment that inspires all the children around the galaxy to pick up a broom and show that they have the Force?
Exactly. Yeah.
That kind of thing? Because I think it was done. I think that's why we don't even need Episode 9.
But we didn't see the effects of that. We didn't see what that did. I mean, I think The Last Jedi is a very small and almost intimate movie. And I think now it's time to, it's a great big universe. I think it's time to get off the ship and get out the sand planet and go to a new sand planet probably. But I think I'm excited about the scope of what JJ builds. And I really want to see that. So I still have hope.
Yeah. I'd like to see, when you were talking about, you know, broadening the scope and showing the full, you know, the full galaxy, yeah. I'm thinking, you know, we really have never seen like a broad scope of like the wars, like several battles happening at once. Now, like there's usually like maybe there's a space battle while some folks on the ground are trying to, you know, bring down a shield or you know, steal something or whatever. But like it would be kind of cool if like there were several fronts to this war that are happening and like we're kind of bouncing around and I wonder if you can even do that with Star Wars at this point or if that's too big of a change to like an established format. But I mean, Mike, I guess I'm right in the middle of you guys. I'm not yet in full like hype mode, you know, like Chris. I think these casting announcements are really exciting. But like for me it's kind of like, oh, cool news. I can't wait to see what jacket they put Kerry Russell in, that kind of thing. but I think, Mike, you know, maybe it's because I've only seen The Last Jedi once to date. I'm not worried about, like, that this won't live up. I think I tend to have the experience where it's like the movie that I just saw is my favorite for, like, a week. And then I sort of can settle it into like where it's actually supposed to go. And I don't know. I may agree with you that like I don't know that Episode 9 is ever going to top 8 for you. Like you,
no,
like
yeah,
what that movie
fair.
Did. But I don't think that inherently makes 9 something to be like less excited about or like it in any way makes it a failure. I mean,
I'm not. Yeah, I'm being a little hyperbolic with it. I'm being
At this point, any time you watch Jedi, you know that you're not going to enjoy it as much as Empire. But also, like, you got to watch Jedi.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, and you have a blast and you love that movie. So I think it might be that kind of scenario. And I think it, you know, in,
we don't
in
have
the best,
to pick favorites. You don't
in
have
the best
to pick
world,
favorites.
it'll strike somewhere between the, you know, it'll strike somewhere on the, dining spectrum, somewhere between the candy of episode 7 and the full meal, you know, 8-course meal of episode 8. And then
the
you'll
impossible
have something
burger of episode 8.
You know, you'll maybe we're gonna get some kind of nice starter, soup and salad to close out the series.
They finally cracked the dinner food that can also be dessert, aka pancakes.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Brekkie for dinny, I like it.
And I agree. I mean, like, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to have fun. I think it's more of, am I going to be satisfied with the way the story plays out, as satisfied as I was in episode 8?
The answer
8?
Is probably no.
Well, but that's, and
I mean, it's a tall bill to fill.
But, and also, Sam, you make a great point, is that with the mindset I have, it's going to be very, very difficult. I'm setting it up in my mind to not be that. But after I watch it the first time and I kind of move on from that first reaction and start to actually analyze the film, the story that was approached, I'm wondering if I'm still going to look at it as not doing the job that 8 did, but I will still have the fun that I plan to or expect to have, because JJ makes a fast-paced, entertaining action-adventure film like he did in The Force Awakens. And it's the way I feel about the difference between Last Jedi and Force Awakens right now, like you just described. I just... To end Star Wars and the Skywalker saga that way would be disappointing to me, but that disappointment would likely fade as I just went back and enjoyed the franchise.
Right. Yeah. I think that ultimately it's going to take some time before, like, right now it's cool, because, like, I don't think I've been in a point of time where I've been old enough to, like, have these kind of thoughts and opinions on it. Even though we were around during, like, the prequels, and Ryan can attest to this, it's like, it was harder to have that kind of opinion on something that you're like, you're too young. Now we have kind of like movie knowledge. We know what our movies are. And so I'm interested to see, like, 10 years from now, are we going to be just like, they were all great? Like, you know how we kind of talk about the original trilogy in that way?
Yeah.
I think now it's just so fresh that it's just so hot and fresh right now, you know?
Oh, boy.
Uh-oh. Wait a second.
Well, on that note, it might be time to talk about our segments here and get into our weekly. And, I mean, Chris, since you're serving it up, we'll play into it for the moment.
Here
go for it. What
were
you
talking
got for us?
We were
Episode
talking
9
a
theories.
We were talking a little bit about Hux, weren't we? Here's a theory. So we've got Matt Smith joining the cast, who has Tarkin-esque qualities. What if Hux becomes a turncoat because he doesn't like the way Kylo Ren is leading things, and Hux joins the Resistance Rebel Army?
That's not your worst Episode 9 theory.
There you go, serving it hot and fresh. I could see him, because he
I think it's a pretty bad theory.
Really? I mean, there's similar things that have happened in other Star Wars series. And I don't think it's out of the realm.
He wants to stop being brutalized by Kylo, and so he's going to turn.
Like, he's
in
not
the Force Awakens.
Yeah,
he gives a Hitler-esque speech to like thousands of stormtroopers before blowing up, like, and snuffing out millions of lives.
Yeah, well, he has all the data. Like, they don't have to like him.
Valuable information.
But he's going to help them. Yeah. Hey, it could happen. This is war, man.
I don't
stuff
like you, but damn it, I respect you.
Yeah, he could. I mean, that's the. He could see a turn for a character, isn't that the whole point? So that's the hot and fresh of the week.
Brought you heard it here first, folks.
Brought to you by Subway sandwiches, hot and fresh.
No.
Sam, hit us with those jackets.
I'm still reeling from Subway being a parent sponsor of the pod now. I do not approve of this.
New
I do
York
not
City,
sign off.
New York City Subway.
Oh, the
different
MTA?
Subway.
I'm down for. That
there's
I'm
a,
down
the
for.
Sandwichery.
Oh, no, there's a sandwichery in a New York City Subway. That's the one I was referring to, New York City Subway.
Oh, boy. So, guys, we're going to do a quick little rundown of... this is actually, you know, we're really on brand tonight because this week's jacket for the conversation is we are looking at the Imperial formal dress uniform, the jacket that, you know, is worn. I'm looking at a photo now of Grand Moff Tarkin in the original Star Wars. And of course, you know, it's in stark contrast to what we see the rebels wearing, who are often in earth tones and the sort of, you know, natural fibers and, you know, browns and tans and leathers and canvases and things like that. This is a heavier, I guess it could be wool. It looks kind of like a synthetic material, though, with a really stiff, tight collar. There's even that line from Lando, the collar's a little snug. Now I know why the Imperials are so uptight when they're in disguise. But looking at it, you know, it's a gray green jacket. It's got, you know, tons of structure. I like that they have these. It's kind of like a double breasted look in terms of how the jacket falls, but it goes all the way across body, and you don't see any buttons on the front, so you just end up with these like hard angular, almost Star Destroyer esque shape. It's like if you took a Star Destroyer and stood it on its nose. That's like the silhouette you get from the jacket, and wow. You know, they've got some great detailing. You know, you wear a belt buckle. It's obviously, you know, it's inspired by you know, past decades, you know, military uniforms and stuff. Obviously, the Imperials are a military organization, and so this is kind of an interesting like 1970s vision of, you know, the future, but a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, but also like pulling from, you know, our own past. It's very like, you know, World War II influence. You've got the badge on the left, sort of left breast has your rank insignia. And then in the pockets, they have, what is it? Something, it's code. It's like code pens or something. What do they call them? I looked it up. But they're code cylinders.
Okay.
So those little things in the pockets,
yeah,
which are like, they look kind of like useless pockets. Like,
is you it kind of like they're like guest pass or something?
I think it's got to be like the firing codes, and like so like Tarkin has four of them. He's got two in each side.
Oh, okay,
you know. But I'm trying to like look through other Imperial uniforms and see that like maybe some have like fewer. I don't know, guys. What do you think? Would you wear it?
I mean, aside from the waist belt, I think I would. They're big. Star Wars is big on the belts without the loops.
It does. Yeah, I was looking at that as well. I don't understand why there's no loops. And I, you know, perhaps the belt is actually like, you know, sewn to the actual jacket. Yeah, just so that's part of the closure. But
there are very few Star Wars costumes or outfits that I would not wear. So, yes, I'm on board for this one.
No, I like it. I think it's pretty classic looking, too. It's, like, done in, like, that World War I, World War II style.
Oh, well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I would never wear it because I'd never join the Imperial Army.
Wow.
All right, listeners, watch out for these two.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
This has been your secret segment of Sniff Out an Imperial.
Man.
Oh, newly hosted by Sam. Just kidding, guys.
He got
that was
us,
fun.
Mike. I did have a small stint in military school, so that was
right.
So I could see
Chris
why
wanted
I was
to
drawn.
Be. Chris wanted to be the best flyer the galaxy had ever seen.
I need a flyer.
What's Galaxy's Edge news, guys.
Whoa.
We've got some big news, I would say, and maybe some concerning news. There's a lot to be excited about with Galaxy's Edge, and beginning next May or June, it will open in Disneyland, and then following November, it will be in Disney World. But the Millennium Falcon ride, there's been word, and this comes from the Disney Dish podcast, that Disney and the Imagineering team that came up with the Galaxy's Edge and Lucasfilm might have been a bit too ambitious, because what they had designed for the ride was six-person seats in the compartment, so a number of different opportunities. I believe there'd be seven different pods where everyone could go in, and what they would, each individual would have their own role within the mission on the Millennium Falcon. So you would be either at the helm steering, or you'd have some job with the hyperdrive, and everyone would have their different role. But as time went on in testing phase, they've realized that too many people would go on the ride not with enough friends in their group. So say if you were with two people or you were with four and the other two people in your group were not part of your friends and they didn't pull their weight, with the game and the ride being so intricate and your actions actually playing out that if you destroy the Falcon or damage the Falcon, they can affect the way you experience the rest of the park, you would then not have a great time if you were stuck with two people who couldn't keep up with your level of performance in the ride. So they're having to go back and retrofit the entire ride to make it a little bit more broad and easily accessible for people, which would diminish the experience because you would not have as many opportunities to do different things. You would have to have it kind of pared down so that you wouldn't go in and walk away having a bad time. And I believe the stat that they used is that for 10% of fans who came in with, say, a group of six of people that they knew, they would have an incredible time. But 90% of people would walk away being disappointed because they didn't have either enough people in their group who could get the job done themselves or were paired with some people that they didn't know. There was just too much complexity, and now they have to go back and change it, which is concerning because I want the complex version. I want the version where I really am challenged and I want to try all the things that I need to do. I mean, and I want to see all the variations.
That's coming from someone who attended Secret Cinema.
Can I say that
my, as soon as you started describing it like a six-person thing, my immediate thing was like, I'm going to hate it. I'm not going to want to do that with strangers.
Yeah.
Like the exact reality that they're experiencing it. You know, I think like living in New York, you know, we have a reputation as like not being the most patient people on the planet and of not being the most like polite and engaging.
What do you mean? What? What are you talking about?
We have the reputation of being the I'm walking here sort of people. Yeah. And I think that like between that and then also being spoiled with like a very large and close-knit group of friends that I've had since college, I'm like, why would I ever want to do that with people I don't know? I'm going to just get so frustrated with them and so impatient. They're not going to do it right.
I mean, there's a more pressing problem, Sam. What about us on the Droids Pod? Two other random people with us on the Falcon? No.
Well, that could be fun. Actually, hey, listen.
Who's going to bypass the compressor?
Droid heads out there, if you want to fill out our Falcon crew, you can win a chance. Sponsored by Subways. Win a chance on the Falcon.
This is discouraging to me though, because it seemed like they had some really exciting ideas with this, and they're almost, I wish that they would say, okay, well, we've got one pod for the serious Star Wars rider and we've got the other six pods are for the general audience. And if you want to be in that one, that line may be a little bit longer, but you can go and do that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thing. You know what they could do? They could figure out a way that like, while you're in line, test your reflexes and or Star Wars knowledge, and then that puts you into that, like assigns you a pod, and that way when you get up to the line, like when you get up to the border of like where you're about to get on the ride, like right at the border, they can just split up all the families and the groups that showed up there. That's what we want to do.
It's just like us and a bunch of 8-year-olds that know every detail about Clone Wars.
Oh, how embarrassing would it be? We would obviously be, all of us would be on the low end of game abilities. You guys are like in your 30s. You're too slow. You don't have, you don't think fast enough. Yeah. You can't remember anything.
Who are those old moof milkers back there?
Yeah. No, I think.
You guys don't play Fortnite?
the trick, you know, that they have to figure out is to make it fun for everybody, and whether that's dumbing things down or whether it's making it like, you know, a 6-person pod with two optional roles. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And then a group can get in, and if you have two people who are a little more shy or who aren't part of the group or who maybe go, like, you know, I'm thinking of like, this could be like moms and dads who are chaperoning, who maybe aren't the Star Wars fans of the family, you know, can be like, yeah, we're going to sit this one back. We're your passengers. So go nuts, you know, or something like that.
It's it's also, it's Disney. I trust them to make a world-class experience. I think a lot of those conceptual things.
World-class experience.
I mean, they have done it. Like, Like, I think, I mean, they don't mess around when it comes to entertainment or just like user interface. They kind of, I think they're going to make up for it in a rewarding way.
They got those wristbands now. So yeah. Nobody waits in line ever.
Well, and those wristbands, though, are also going to be the reason why your experience on the Falcon will go with you. Because the wristbands will acknowledge when you walk in the cantina and they'll be like, you destroyed the Falcon.
It's pretty amazing.
I'm still very excited about it. I guess I just want to see that ambitious version, but I know that I'll love it no matter what because you're going to allow me to pilot the Falcon. So
right.
I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
Guys, unless there's any other pressing hot and fresh moments, I think that's pretty much going to do it for this edition of the pod. We got through it without Ryan. Who knows if he'll return? I believe he's come down with some sort of moof milking illness.
I hope he, you'll know if the podcast gets released, that means he's all right.
Well, I'm really so upset that Hot and Fresh has taken off. I hate how much it's being said.
This has been Star Wars, the droid you're looking for, a Star Wars podcast presented by Hot and Fresh Subway. Do you like that?
No. No. Guys, it's like 95 degrees and 100% humidity here in New York.
We got that binary sunset Tatooine heat here. So what do you say?
Let's call it a day on this pod. Thanks for listening. This has been The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast.
These are the droids you're looking for.
This is madness.
Annie?
Hot and fresh. You boys want to go to medieval times?
I wish medieval times is what took off, not hot and fresh from that.
Yeah, medieval times should have taken off.
Hot and fresh.